Deje jawa da jomba yanda ban zombe sangye riba da jawzo demba dewara jigde jemba jebo dewe galo jowa lana meba lada menamje tumba sangye jomde jawa jaja duba la jaze lo jodo jawzo jowa demba jomde de deje Dajumba yanda ba zobe sanje riba da jazu demba devara shiva chigde kalu juva lana meba lada menam jitumba sanje jumdende pejava shayadu chazu lo chudu jazu shivu demba jumdende teje shiva chajumba yanda ba zobe sanje Shabzu denba devara sheba jigden jemba jebun dube kalu juba lana meba sada menam jitumba sanje Shaja duba la chadze lo chudu jabzu che o Gumbu chizun jambi yana chadze lo Kangi lo ju timni tinde nyenda namda ramse Chini jiji siji niji duga lebamze Kanda sibe tsura mari mendomo tunye gizebe Jozo kunla puji tazi yela tuju yandesu Chuda chichu nyumu nyilu legi chadu chuzichi Mari mese dunye nyugu chini shunze rajina Tene daji saju daji yendin lundu yazi tuviku Chuda chuda chuni kende talu mese Yala du omo arabazana de Omo arabazana de Omo arabazana de Omo arabazana de 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 Kege kera ve sege dalı temu mümba rabse Kada denju şunlu doba ye Lodru pobe nava tse dosu Juzi medo tama rira aleje nyende genba de Sange shindu mide bewa ye Jogwe namda jela jibara shoy Tamba ge nama ge chugwe kala genze tente ne Chedara zambe duja zima ala savge chwe charba avdo su Kanaya deyame Tsoji cho namala chanchu badu tani gyavsu chi Tagi chu chi gibi su namai Jola penche sanji indru barai shu Chudan tsoji cho namala chanchu badu tani gyavsu chi Tagi chu chi gibi su namai Jola penche sanji Jobara sho Dida jege tambe chunye jene deje she namo laye jadan ludan nujenge rubunda dame yege namdan jowa gunge chanam chizam tamje jedo dage chudun dos.
Good morning. So how was your week? Were there any opportunity to practice or apply what we have been discussing over the weeks? Please share.
Well, I have a long ways to go, but more and more I have, I've talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I have the thought when I'm finding myself sort of having any kind of negative feelings towards a situation or someone, I'm finding myself thinking, what Lama Sopa had said in one of his things about bodhicitta, that people will misbehave. So just thinking that, it just brings me right down. And then the next thing that comes, again, it's sometimes that, you know, those are my relatives, treat them like that. And then yesterday, I was in communication with someone who, anyway, the same thing. And one more thing came up, is that offered a victory. You know, so I said, I just said, sorry for, you know, if I miscommunicated, you know. So I just took it upon myself, because that came, that thought came.
So what was the response from the other person when you kind of apologized?
Well, it wasn't a text message.
Oh, I see, it's a text message.
The response was positive. It just stopped the situation.
Yeah, exactly.
And then spin it in a normal way, more neutral, positive in a way.
Yeah, you...
But another time, the time that about the relative, I had driven on a nail, and I came back from work late, at the work parking lot, and there was a nail, and I had a flat tire, and I was irritated, and called, and so on and so forth, and the guy that came in, from the AAA, was that kind of the, and when I said treat him like a relative. The whole thing changed, and he was talking to me about his kids and so on. It's like, it's my relative, So he was giving me advice because I had this temporary thing and how to drive on it and what to look for and, so on. So I left with a friend,
Yeah, that's great. Remember you said that Lama Sopa Rinpoche said so. You were supposed to say that you said so in the last class. Just kidding.
Well, you said everything but this little piece.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I know you are.
Yeah.
And I give you the credit.
Only after I raise it, is it? I think it's very true, when we are able to just a little shift. That's what I have been, remember sharing that. Just a little shift to our attitude. Instead of, how difficult this is, they're not showing up, all this. But if you treat it as you mentioned, your relative, and then you see everything, the situation, whole experience becomes tolerable. It's completely different. But if you view that person as, not showing on time, taking a long time, also, especially when they ask a lot of questions, why is this so busybody and all that, it's a completely different experience. But of course, all this has to do with the mindfulness. Most of the time, we don't remember when there is a stimuli, when we encounter some incidents, the first thing is we react. Remember, we talked about, the mindfulness. is to make us respond instead of reacting. Our tendency is just to react, but through mindfulness, we will be able to respond instead of react. So that's different. That gives you the opportunity. It creates that emotional gap. It gives you the space and then choose what to do, what to say, what to think. But most of the time we are not mindful. So we are just kind of, driven or overwhelmed or taken over by our emotions. And then we react in an impulsive way. And then, of course, at the end, there's a lot of regret. Thank you. That was very good. Thank you for sharing. Anyone? Yeah, those who are, I see some new faces. So what we normally do is, so every Sunday we discuss on different topics, and then everybody goes back to their life and then try to apply, try to integrate what we have discussed in class, and then comes back and then share with the class, you know, how you applied all this in your life. And through that, we all learn, we all gain insight. So that's why before each class, we have this kind of sharing session. Anyone want to share? Looks like this past week wasn't very eventful, is it? Okay, if not, then yeah, we will start today's teaching. Today we are going to talk on this 8 verses on mind training. And I don't feel comfortable teaching this because these are real, you should teach from your own experience through practice. And I don't have any kind of experiential, insight or no real practice. So what I am sharing here is just kind of an explanation. What the text means, what the Lamrim says, what this text says, what that Lama says. I'm doing that even though it is not comfortable. I'm not confident to really teach this, but with the hope that if I share this, at least maybe some of you will take it seriously and put them into practice. Even just one instance of putting these lines into practice is good enough for me. It serves the purpose of my sharing. So please, even though you know I don't have any experience, but please try. I think it is very helpful. There is not, of course, these are to achieve enlightenment, but in our daily life, there are so many challenges, inevitable challenges. But if we are able to bring this into our life, I think it can kind of minimize our pain and suffering, then everything becomes more tolerable. So even we may not be able to attain that highest goal to achieve enlightenment, at least it has some benefits in managing our difficulties. So first, I think many of you are very familiar with this text, 8 verses on mind training. It is a very popular, even though it is very short and abrupt, but very powerful teachings. And most of the time, I think lamas give this teaching. So I think you are already familiar with this. So what does it mean? These sets of teachings are classified as Lojong teaching. So first we need to understand, what does it mean? What does Lojong mean? So there are two syllables in Lojong. So all Tibetans would understand. So what does Lojong mean? There are two, so Lo plus Jong. That makes Lojong. Commonly translate as mind training. So Lo means mind, thought, or attitude. So in Buddhism, this is so important, the mind. Other traditions talk about a creator, somebody creates everything. Whatever our situation is, there is some external factor there, something external that that created all that. Whereas from the Buddhist perspective, there is no creator. It is all mind. That's why I think during one of our meditation, we discussed about, you know, the mind is the one. Remember, there is this line, this stanza from Shantideva. It says that if you are able to transform your mind, then all the fears, all the difficulties, all the sufferings, it is similar to subduing all that. That's why Buddha taught 84 volumes, we say that normally, 84,000 volumes of teachings. But it can all be summarized into one stanza, which is, do not commit negative actions. Do all the virtuous actions. Completely tame your mind. That is the teaching of Buddha. So Buddha's teaching, whole that volume, can be condensed into one stanza. So first is that do not commit all negativities, all negative actions. Why? Because fundamentally, we all aspire for happiness, and we do not want to experience suffering. In Lama Chöpa it says that dunye tamu samya midoji tela namya choshi mebani dada shen la kebara yomishis. Everybody, including tiny insects, we are similar in wanting happiness, and also similar in not being satiated, contented by even the greatest amount of pleasure and happiness. We still strive for more. That's same with even the tiny ants that walks around. And then nobody wants to experience the slightest pain, slightest suffering. That is also similar with all sentient beings. So if that is our fundamental aspiration, all this happiness and suffering do not arise without cause and conditions. First of all, it needs causes. And not all causes brings up that. You have to, the cause must correspond with the result. What is called concordant causes and conditions. So if we want happiness, then the only way is to cultivate virtuous actions. If we do not want to experience any suffering, then we should stop cultivating the causes, that is, negative action. So all this, the cultivation of virtuous action and creating negative action, it all springs from mind, our mind. That's why Buddha said, completely tame your mind. Remember, we talk about three doors of actions, the body, speech, and mind. Body and speech, mind, is contingent on our mind. So as long as we are unable to subdue our mind, then there is no way we can subdue other actions, body's action or speech action, action of speech. So in Buddhism, so mind is the only one. Mind is so powerful. So if we don't do anything to this, what most of the time we do is when we have some problem, some suffering, some pain, we always try to change our external things. We try to fix things externally in the absence of, you know, looking inward and trying to change inward within us. So Buddhism is saying that no, there's no way you can achieve lasting happiness just by trying to fix external and conditions. You have to fix here. So mind is the one that is responsible for all our happiness, from the tiniest happiness to the Buddhahood. Mind is also the cause or the creator of all our problems. So that's why we have to train our mind. So that's why Lojong comes in. Jong. So if mind has that potential, then why not train that in a way that is beneficial to us, in a way that can bring about happiness and prevent suffering. After all, that's what we aspire for. That's what we wish for. So Jong, there are different connotations, different meaning. Normally it's training. You act in that practice, like people who go to gym. They train themselves every day, athletes and swimmers, whatnot. And then through persistence, then you will be able to achieve what you want, especially those bodybuilders. They want to build muscles. So if they continuously do that, then they will be able to build that muscle. And then another meaning is Jong is to be familiar with. So if we engage in something repeatedly, then it becomes our second nature. That becomes our habit. And Jong also, there is this connotation of cleansing, purification, purifying our negativities. So if we combine all this, the understanding we get is that our mind at the moment is at certain level which requires cleansing, which requires to be habituated in a certain way, which requires a lot of trainings. So at the moment, our mind, as an ordinary person, is always filled with all these afflictions. Compared, of course, Buddha's mind is free of afflictions, but ordinary people. We get angry, we get jealousy, we get hatred, we get greed and all that. But if we practice, if we do some kind of training, then there is a way to transform that. So at the moment, we have this anger, all these afflictive emotions. The root, of course, it is the ignorance, but the other kind of root is this cherishing for ourselves. This thought all the time, self-absorbed thought, is always about I. In Lamrim text, we call that self-cherishing thought. Instead of having this other cherishing thought, we are all obsessed all the time with this I. It's all about I. So until and unless we are able to change that, instead of cherishing ourselves, instead of being absorbed with our own welfare, if we are able to develop this self-cherishing thought, always thinking about others, there is no way we can really progress that far. Not to mention enlightenment and bodhicitta and all that. So here, even though Lojung, the Buddhist, the whole teachings of Buddha can be classified as Lojung, but here particularly we are talking about training our mind in a particular way, in a certain way, which is to have this other cherishing thought. So that's the meaning of Lojung here. Our tendency, our habit, is to have this self-cherishing thought all the time. We all know that compassion is such a great quality to have. Bodhicitta is such a good quality to have. And engaging in all these compassionate actions, being generous, engaging in act of generosity, going for charity work and all this, even though we know that these are good things to do, these are such an excellent quality, but we do not do that. Why? Because of this self-cherishing thought. If I give 1,000 to that poor institute, poor community, what would happen to me? My balance will go down. I won't have much money. You see, there's I. If I volunteer on Sunday, that home, the orphanage or those old folk homes, what would happen to my Sunday? I will lose 3 hours. I will have no Sunday to enjoy. My rest day will be finished. I don't want to go. Oh, my friend, somebody needs help. I want to help, but then I need to do something else. So that's why, even though we know that these are really good qualities, we are being prevented by this self-cherishing thought. That is the reason why we need to have Lojong practice. That's why we need to train our mind so that we have that self-cherishing thought. We are able to put others in front of us. So that's what we are trying. That's what the main goal of Lojong practice. So through Lojong practice, we are supposed to reduce our attachment to ourselves. We become more magnanimous, is it? More generous towards others. That's the whole goal. So the lineage, the source of this mind training, of course, it has to come from Buddha. Buddha did not teach it as, you know, separately as Lojong practice, but Buddha taught in general. And then like Shantideva and all that they come kind of compiled those set of teachings. So normally Lojong refers to, you know, we have two methods of cultivating compassion. One is the lineage that came from Asanga, and another one that came from Shantideva. So here Lojong is more of that, the Shantideva's tradition, where we exchange ourselves and others. So here, of course, you all know that just to emphasize, when we exchange means we are not saying that other becomes, you know, one we become others and other becomes us. It is exchanging this thought, this attitude. I am so important. They are not. When it comes to I am the priority. So we need to switch that. When it comes to others, oh, others are so important. I think I have mentioned earlier that I have these friends, Lama friends, Rinpoches. Of course, they are Rinpoches, and they really are always about others. So when you ask these, especially these two Rinpoches, my kind of contemporary, they are always, they treat others' requests or others' things so important. So they, we in Dibung, so we, I'm from Dibung Losili Monastery. So in order to go to the main city, it is like almost an hour's journey from monastery. So we often have to go to the city. And then because we don't get many things in our monastery area, so we need to get things from the city. So when they go to that Hubli city, they will be actually running errands for others. Because they're so kind, people take advantage of them. And there was this funny incident which I shared. So that one lama, they were together in the room and said, why are you always, you know, doing other people's thing? You know, why we are here to have our own thing, and why are you doing? And then the call comes. Huh? How many kilo? Oh, okay, I'll get for you. You see, it's their nature. They cannot say no to other things. They really treat others, you know, that there's this errand so important. Even if they have their own things, they just, you know, drop it and do other people's thing. So that's what, you know, this about. Exchanging oneself and others. So the lineage, the origin, of course, it first came Buddha, then Buddha to Shantideva, and then it came to Tibet, Adisha. So Lamrim teaching and Lojong teachings in Tibet is mainly from Adisha. And I think if time permits, I wanted to tell the story. You may be already aware of the stories how Adisha came to Tibet. He was invited by this Changchubu. Are you familiar with this story? Changchubu and Yishiwu. So sometimes it is good to read again and remind these stories. It's so inspiring. So there was this era in Tibet where Buddhism is kind of dying. There are a lot of these misconceptions, and people are not really practicing the pure Dharma. So this, the king, at that time Tibet was ruled by different kings. There is no common, there's no such thing, I mean, one king that kind of rules the whole area. So there was this Yishiwu. So he wanted to revive Buddhism. And he knew about this Adisha, Lama Adisha in India. He wanted to invite. So at that time he was thinking of all this, and then he was, but what happened was at that time when he was planning to invite Lama Adisha, he got arrested by this another king, Kalok King, King of Kalok, or Kalok, yeah. Non-Buddhist, and he was imprisoned, and the ransom, kind of ransom is that, so of course his, I think his nephew, so approached this king, said, please, you know, release my uncle. He said, yeah, I can release you, but bring gold weighing the same weight, is it? Same amount of, yeah. How do you say that?
Weighs as much as
his weight.
His weight in gold.
His weight in gold. That was the demand. Of course, being his own uncle, he really tried to arrange that. And then he went back with lots of gold. And the king said that still not enough, still short of a weight of his head. So he went to see his uncle. He said, "Oh, don't worry, uncle, I am still working on this. I'm just short of, you know, that amount of gold. But eventually I will get you out." But Yeshiva said, "No, don't waste all that gold on me. Please, you know, I'm okay. This is the, I have taken many lives, but this is the only life that I'm able to do something meaningful, something for Dharma. So instead of, you know, paying that gold to this king, he said, even if you pay him more, he would never release me. So instead, you just bring that money and invite Lama Adisha." So that is kind of a sacrifice he made. And because of that, we have Lamrim teachings, we have Lojong teachings. So eventually, his nephew was able to bring Lama Adisha to Tibet, and then Lama Adisha taught Lamrim and all that. So he composed this teaching, the Lamb on the Path. In there, there's one line that said, "Loma Sangpo, Chanju Wei Ji Kuiwei Nas." So as requested by the noble student, Changju Wei. So that's, you refer to it. So that's how the Lojong practice came to Tibet. And Adisha then taught to Tom Dumba. And at those days, Lojong teaching is not taught openly, only taught to selected people in a very secret way. That's why we call it Nyingyu, is through oral transmission, but only to those selected students. So Lama Adisha passed that on to Tom Dumba, and then Tom Dumba to Potowa, and then Potowa, he has these two famous Nyinda, they call it, that is like the sun and like sun-like and moon-like students. So we have this Langri Thamba and Sharawa. And then of course Sharawa passed it on to Chekawa. And Chekawa was the one who made these teachings available for wider audience, because he felt that it is such a loss not to share these precious teachings with a wider audience. And that's why after that he started to teach to the big community, and then of course he composed this 7-point mind training. So that's how that's the origin of mind training. That's how mind training started. Oops, sorry. Ignore this, first introduce the tradition. So this was mentioned somewhere else. So today, the teachings that we are going to discuss was composed by Langri Thamba. And Langri Thamba, I think it was born in 1054, and I think Langri Thamba lived about 70 years. So Langri Thamba is known to practice all the time, practicing this cherishing others, always contemplating on the kindness of Mother Sentient Beings. And there was this line where he is known to have said that everything he does, whatever he reads, whatever he is, everything to him is like, "Oh, the sentient beings are so kind, and whatever I have, the good qualities, whatever I have is really by the kindness of sentient beings. And whatever fault, it is just only to blame myself. So that's Langri Thangpa. And Langri Thangpa is known to be Ngonakpa. That means always having this dark face. Always, you know, kind of a serious face. So one time, the people close to him said that, why don't you, you know, kind of smile a bit and, you know, engage in some talks when people come to see you. But Langri Thangpa said, how could I do that when I see the suffering? Because he is all the time doing contemplation on the faults of our existence, always seeing the nature of suffering. So all the time being saddened by the situation. So he said then, no, I cannot. So there was this, it is known that Langri Thangpa has actually smiled once or twice. And one time they said that he smiled because he was watching this rat in his whatever meditation place, altar there, and there was this mandala offering there. There was this gem on the mandala set, and this rat was trying to carry that. And when he saw, you know, how he struggled, he was struggling with that heavy gem there, so he couldn't resist but to laugh. So they said that was the only time he laughed. Of course, for us, we can, you know, remain serious or remain sad. But the cause, what drives that kind of seriousness is different. Because Langri Thangpa is all the time doing that contemplation on the suffering nature of existence. That's why he sees it's all there's the suffering there. As long as we don't get there, we are suffering. So anyway, so this was composed by Langri Thangpa. And there was another incident. Remember in his teaching, there was this line, may I be able to offer victory to others. So one time, a lady brought a child and then handed to him and said, this is your child. And Langri Thangpa just took it and raised that child. Didn't even say one word. Then after a few years later, the lady came back and apologized to say that that was the recommendation. Her first child died. And then when they did astrology and all this divination, the advice is that you just leave your child with somebody else. So she came back and apologized, because of that I did that. And I want my child back. Give her back. Who would be able to do that in this modern time? It's like inferring that you are the father. And he is such a renowned teacher. And he is not concerned about what people will say about him. He is not concerned at all about his fame and name and all that. Since that's what you wish, okay, I'll take. And then later when she wanted it back, okay, that's what you... I don't care about my name, fame, all this thing. Whatever benefits you, I am willing to do. So that kind of mindset. So this teaching is about developing that kind of mindset. So let's try to delve into this. The first word, Tani Simjin Tamjela Yishin Nobu Lela Tianjur Dubi Sambai Tao to Chebran Zimbar Lap Tao to Chebran Zimbar Shok. With a wish to achieve the highest aim, which surpasses even a wish fulfilling gem, for the benefit of all sentient beings, may I hold them dearly at all times. So this is all to cultivate bodhicitta. Remember, we discussed about two methods of cultivating compassion. So the main kind of trigger or the impetus, is it?
Impetus
is when you are able to generate this affection, that what we call the sense of endearment, this sense of closeness to all sentient beings. So once this sense of closeness is not a normal thing. It is, you know, the way that mother had for her only child. That kind of affection, that kind of endearment, sense of endearment. So when you have that kind of sense of endearment towards other person, then when you see other person suffering, automatically compassion arises. You want to relieve that person of all sufferings, even the slightest pain and suffering. You want to relieve the person of that pain and suffering. And you want to give all the, what you call, joy and happiness in the world to that person. That only arises, that kind of motivation, that kind of intention, only arises when you have this sense of closeness, this sense of endearment. So there are two ways to cultivate that sense of endearment. One way is through what is called the six cause and one result. That is, first, of course, recognizing all sentient beings as your mother, and then remembering their kindness, and then this intention to repay. So that's one way to cultivate. Once you have this understanding, this realization that all sentient beings had been one's mother at one time, then the way mothers have been kind to us in this life. Of course, this can be quite controversial. Yeah, I know. So you can always, you know, think of whoever has been kind to you in this life. If it's your father, if it's your grandparents, if it's your sister. So you can actually use that. Since your sister has been the one who has been very kind to you, all sentient beings have been our sister and have been that way. Because the number of times that we have taken that role is kind of infinite. So there is this likelihood, very strong likelihood, that, you know, this could have happened. So that's one way to cultivate this sense of endearment. Another way is to realize the kindness of other sentient beings, how kind other sentient beings have been. So here it says, like, which surpasses even the wish-fulfilling gem. We have discussed this before. Wish-fulfilling gem. Of course, nowadays it is non-existent. But those days, there is something called this gem, which grants all your wishes. If you wish for $1 billion, there it appears. If you wish for a huge house, it appears. If you wish for, I don't know, BMW or whatever, big car, it appears. That would be wonderful, isn't it? To have that kind of, you know, wish fulfilling, that kind of gem. But here it says that if you compare Mother Sentient Being's kindness, it surpasses this wish fulfilling gem. Because no matter how much this wish fulfilling gem can grant us, it's all about this life. it can give you money, fame, place, whatever. But beyond that, it is useless. If you wished, or if you make prayer, or if you, request to be achieved a good human rebirth in next life, that wish fulfilling gem, no matter how many times you ask it, it cannot. Of course, not to mention about liberation, the Buddhahood and all that. But on the other hand, sentient beings, first of all, they have been our mother many times, have been our father, have been our brother, have been our sister many, many times. And they have been very kind in that regard. And then, through other sentient beings, we will be able to ensure a good rebirth in next life, because the cause of good rebirth is engaging in pure moral ethics. That is to refraining ourselves from harming others. So if there is no other sentient beings, there's no way you can practice this ethical conduct. And then if you want to have resources in your next life, you need to engage in the act of generosity. If there were no other sentient beings, where are we going to engage that practice? And then, of course, we all know that even the enemies, in order to perfect our practice of patience, enemy is the only one that provides the opportunity for us to perfect our practice. So, for future life, we are reliant, we are contingent on others' kindness. And then Buddhahood, first of all, in order to achieve Buddhahood, we need to cultivate compassion, bodhicitta. Without others, no way we can cultivate compassion. Without compassion, no bodhicitta. Without bodhicitta, no enlightenment. And not only bodhicitta, we need to perfect all these six perfections. As mentioned, perfection of patience. Without others, no way we can perfect these six perfections. So we are contingent on others. And then even now in this world, we are living comfortably. We have food to eat. We have clothes to wear. We have air condition, heater, and all this. Where does it come from? We think that, oh, I have money, you know, I'm paying for it. But without others, where? Even if you have money, what are you going to do that? Even that money, who produced that? You need people to print and all that. Even here, our classroom, we are gathered here. Without Anthony, there won't be this house for us. And of course, without all of you, we won't be having this class. Without you, I won't be able to have this opportunity to teach, to share. You see, if we really analyze our situation, if we look deeper into all these incidents, all this occurrence, there is always somebody else. Even just the sweaters and jackets that we wear, how many sentient beings are involved? If you are wearing a woolen jacket, woolen sweater, sheep are involved. And then people who hurt those sheep, all involved. Then from there, cutting off the wool, then go to the factory. How many people? And I rely a lot on Amazon. And you see, people who delivers, so important. So in this sense, Lung Ritam Pa is saying that the kindness of sentient beings surpasses all this. So it is worthy to repay that. I mean, we need to repay the kindness. And another way to look at it is that since sentient being is really the source of, you know, our happiness, the ultimate happiness, that is the Buddhahood, we really have to cherish them. So the analogy that is given in the Lam Rim text is that if you have, for the farmers, if you have this farmland which produces good harvest, wouldn't you really preserve that? It's same with, you know, if you have a business, if it is churning good income, you would really protect that. You will really treasure that. So likewise, is that why not? Since sentient beings are the source of all that happiness, we should really cherish them. And Shantideva kind of concludes with this. Simjin namdan yawala sanje chutub dawala gela kuja teshindu simjin lamin chi tsuls. You got that? So it says, from sentient beings and Buddhas alike we accomplish Buddhahood. So just as we honor the Buddhas, why don't we treat sentient beings the same way? Because we revere Buddha, because Buddha taught us, Buddha teaches and all this. Because of that, there is this likelihood. If we follow the teaching, we will achieve enlightenment. We will achieve the ultimate happiness, the lasting happiness. Because of that, we revere, we honor Buddha. So if that is your reason, it says, why not? The sentient beings, they are alike. Without sentient beings, no way we can achieve enlightenment. Not even, you know, a good rebirth in future life. So there is no reason to discriminate this reverence. You know, you honor Buddha and not sentient beings. So this is all about. So through this contemplation, we are to develop this cherishing self, other cherishing thought. Then slowly, then we will be, if we have this other cherishing thought, at the moment, our thought and attitude is dominated by this self-cherishing thought. So now we need to reverse that. So make that self-cherishing thought peripheral, just a sight, you know, track, and make that attitude of cherishing other the main thing, the central thing. Then we will be really able to do a lot of good things, as I mentioned. We wanted to do a lot of things, good things, but it's always, what do you call, prevented by all this, what will happen to me. So when you are able to make that the dominant, the self, other cherishing, the dominant one, then you don't have to have this fear. You will be happy to do that. So this is what Lung Ritam Pa is saying. With the wish to achieve the highest aim, which surpasses even the wish-fulfilling gem, for the benefit of sentient beings, may I hold them dearly at all times. So if you are able to view other sentient beings in that light, our life would be different, completely different. Our interaction with others would be different. Remember Jocelyn mentioned about if you are able to view them as brothers and sisters, your relatives, how did they change that you know, whole experience? But if you're able to view them as a wish, more than wish fulfilling gem, that would be wonderful. So that's the meaning of the first stanza. So now we come to the second verse, which says, whenever I interact with others, first let me read the Tibetan one. Kangdo sudan chobe se tanyi kuin le men da shishen la samba tabayi chodo cheba zimba shos. Whenever I interact with others, may I view myself as the lowest among all, and from a very depth of my heart, hold others as superior. This is very difficult, isn't it, to do?
I think it's the most difficult one.
Yeah.
And it feels good.
So remember, the first verse is to cultivate this other cherishing thought. So when we kind of made our mind to really cultivate that, then when we go into the real world, when we interact with people, we encounter all kinds of hurdles, all kinds of obstacles. So the following these, the verse 2 and 3, 4, these are addressing these challenges. So what shall we do, you know, when we interact with other people? Because when we interact with other people, many times, because of our certain attitude, we lose that, you know, cherishing for others. We lose viewing others as precious and all that. So one of it is this pride. So here, this is about humility. So I think you have come across Tibetan lamas. When you ask many of Tibetan lamas, it is very common, they will say that, oh, I don't know anything about it. But then when you kind of probe that, they will give you a lengthy explanation. So this modesty and, you know, the humility is part of the practice. They never boast about that. Always remain humble. So they are actually doing this, following the practice. So one time, that was in Dharamsala, my early years, I was attending His Holiness teaching. And you know, His Holiness teaching, day before the teaching, you have to go and grab your seat. So I went there, and then Rinpoches have this separate area allocated for Rinpoches. So I went there, and when I got there, there was this old monk sitting there. My first impression was, why is this old monk sitting here? This is reserved for Rinpoches. And he looked, you know, kind of thin and very, you know, well down. And later I found out that he was Giddhisthenshap Rinpoche, such a great lama, great practitioner. With his kind of fame and name, he can be like, you know, I am Giddhisthenshap Rinpoche, you know. He can afford to have, you know, few attendants around him. But no, he just came alone there, sitting there, as if he was nobody. When I realized that, because I heard about Giddhisthenshap Rinpoche, but I never met him. So later when I learned that, no wonder he is famous. Yeah. So these are the practice that this verse is teaching about. And remember I mentioned about this Tibetan lamas, you know, saying that, oh, I don't know. So I think I related this here. So there was this Rinpoche from Dipung Lhasa, from our monastery. So he was in Atlanta Center, Lhasa Ling Center there, teaching Rinpoche being Rinpoche. And when people ask, and he would say, oh, I don't know, all this. So the one who found, or shall I say, the main person at the center. So he had to approach Rinpoche and beg him not to say that. Because he says that in the West, if you say you don't know, they will take it literally. They will think that you are stupid. So he said, that, please, Rinpoche, I understand, you know, this is the Tibetan culture. You know, we say that we always try to be modest. But in the West, you cannot say that. Is that true?
Yes.
In the West, yeah, you have to say that. I know everything.
Yeah.
I know. Because it is like, because this, I think I mentioned the self-esteem. One of the measures of your success is self-esteem. How much self-esteem you have. So self-esteem is all about, you know, evaluating yourself, how good you are. So if you say that I don't know, I'm not good, I'm inferior, oh, that's too bad.
I tried that in staff meeting a couple of times, it didn't go too well. I won't do it again.
Yeah.
Can I just say that this is in part because our culture is one that has people in privilege and those not in privilege who are already held as not superior to take the stance of being not superior is not going to be seen as anything other than them accepting their rightful place.
A confirmation
of the fact that they are not superior. So this is a practice in particular very important for those of us who are in privilege. We are the ones who need to do this.
What about mental disposition of equanimity, though? I mean, because this has always been one that I've wrestled with in particular, because in Abang, he said, you know, he used the analogy of water, you know, the lowest place where the water gathers. And that was helpful. But the idea of equanimity and not finding hierarchy important, or patriarchal hierarchy is important, to the point of not being disrespectful, but seeing that all sentient beings have a equal nature, in a sense. I guess, so that's where I find difficult, is at this stage.
Yeah. Of course, the main teaching or practice is to view everybody as equal. But then we also have to acknowledge that, you know, you have bosses and, you know, subordinates and all that. You cannot say that, oh, we are equal, you cannot give me order. You cannot assign me job. Even though there is this view about equal human being, but we cannot ignore this hierarchy. You cannot say to boss, you know, oh, you know, I'm not going to listen to you. You will get fired. So that's the norm, isn't it? So we need to have this as well. We have to balance that. But when you interact with other people, say, from your side is to view all beings as sentient beings. But you still have to follow the norm. Yeah, sometimes if this happens, oh, we are all equal, you know. Why, you know, all this, you know, you have CEO, you have things, a manager, all this. But there has to have this in order for the system to work. And mental disposition, yeah. Mental disposition is basically means your inclinations. People have different inclinations. But because, I mean, that is actually for us to understand other people. For us to respect others, for us we can use that to be humble towards others. Because when we see other people acting in that kind of nature, then we can say, oh yeah, because he has a different mental disposition. Maybe he is more inclined to doing this. Maybe he has, because of that, you know, he has cultivated such causes to behave in this certain way. So that's maybe we can use that mental disposition as a way to respect others, rather than, you know, giving that as an excuse and then, you know, all that. Mm. So here we're saying that it's basic. I wanted to tell more stories. Of course, it is. So there was another story about Yongzhen Ling Rinpoche. You all know who Ling Rinpoche is? Yeah, so, reincarnation of Yongzhen Ling Rinpoche. So Yongzhen Ling Rinpoche, Yongzhen is the tutor or the teacher of His Holiness. So when Rinpoche was, we call Lama Umze, Yudu Lama Umze. So that is more like, deputy abbot, but he is lineage abbot. When he was taking part in one of the rituals, so there's this, those who are familiar with sadhana, doing yamantaka, all this, so there is part where blessing the inner offering. So when he, of course, the inner offering says that, the fire, and then it boils the whatever that is contained in there. So at that stage, when he was doing meditation, it started to boil. He quickly grabbed that and hid under his cloak. His robe. He hid that. He didn't want others to see. If I am able to perform that kind of feat, I'll say, look, yeah, what's happening, Look at this, what kind of feat I was able to perform. You see, that's the difference. And then I have a friend. He's a monk. He is, graduate from TCV school. So he speaks English very well. So very often he will be asked by monks to translate for them. So when monks have visitors, so he will be called to help. In monasteries those days, we have very few monks who can speak English. So it is always, I am the few amongst those who can speak English. But this monk, so sometimes you have to pass through monks who are doing debate. And he refused to be in the presence of monks. He will ask the foreigners to, you go this way, I will take the detour. So I said, why do you do that? He said, no, I don't want to. Same way, if I were him, I will be, with my head held high, I will say, to show that, I can speak English. That's also he was practicing humility. So all this, why it is so important is, you look at the picture there, especially down there. What do you think this is trying to depict? That harvest there. We have a saying, Nyema tongbang gobang tos, yonde mebang ageches. When it is a good harvest, when there are really, harvests in there, it tend to bend down. When there's nothing in there, it's... Yeah, that's why it says, when you have knowledge and all this, you tend to be humble. And if you are humble, you will be able to, absorb more knowledge, more respect. Let's say if you want to learn something, but if you have this attitude that, he doesn't know anything, will you be able to learn anything from that person? No. But whereas if you see the quality, he is great scholar, he knows this and this, he's very good in this, you will look for other things. That's how you learn. And then likewise, if you have this humility, you won't go and, normally we say that, the pride, normally what will happen is, when you think that you are so good, I am so good and all this, what happens is, three things happens. First, those who are superior than you, you will develop jealousy. Yeah. I must, defeat him. There's this jealousy. And then your equals, you have this sense of competition. I must beat him. And then those who are inferior than you, you will look down on them. So that's what happens when you have this pride. And with that kind of attitude, no way you are going to view other sentient beings as, you know, precious as this wish-fulfilling gem. So that is the main reason why we need to have this attitude. If we don't have this kind of attitude of humility, no way we are going to progress. No way we will be able to view other sentient beings as, you know, kind, and we won't be able to generate this sense of gratitude. So that's one reason.
I wanted to address Anthony's point that this verse appears to contradict equanimity practice.
Is that the question?
I think there's some mention of that. I speak only for myself. I'm habituated to think quite highly of myself. And therefore, I need to practice this in order to even practice equanimity. There's no way to get to the point of equanimity without first doing this. And even people with low self-esteem, I believe that there's still ego there, even in low self-esteem people, which is somehow not being satisfied, and therefore they have a poor view of themselves. So likewise, even for them, I feel this verse has relevance. Otherwise, we can never get to the next stage.
Thank you. Yeah, this is not easy practice. Definitely not easy, not an easy practice. But as with all practices, so when you are able to see the benefit of doing it, then that will act as impetus, and that will motivate us to practice this. And from our own experience, we know that a person who is arrogant and, you know, full of himself, nobody likes that kind of person. Whereas a person who is humble and, you know, all that, people like it. So why not? Since we all are craving for, you know, others to like us, why not practice something? Why not do something that will really make others like you? Most of the time, you know, we want something, but we do the opposite. So this is the practice. So put to practice, experiment, you know, how this results in, what this results in. But of course, His Holiness always, I mean, sometimes there's this question arises. So does it mean that, you know, if we are treated unfairly, should we just, you know, keep quiet and, you know, be humble? But His Holiness says that no, that is not the case. So there's a lot of misconception when you say that you have to be compassionate. Likewise, you know, when talk about compassion, love and all these people, some people, yeah, they don't want, because it's like they equate compassion into kind of a what is the word?
Weakness,
and then, you know, letting all others take advantage of you. But His Holiness says, no, you can always speak to them, but without anger. So recently I had a visitor here, a girl who is having some difficulty at her workplace. So she came to see me, and so I talked to her, you know, yeah, you don't have to, you know, argue with the person, but you just talk to the person to say that, you know, you are doing this and this and that, and I don't like it, or something. Just bring up the issue without anger, you see. So she came back, I think a few weeks later, she said, oh, that worked, thank you very much.
without
black eye, yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I think that there is always a way to solve these issues.
Can I bring one thing you said about
sure.
saying the three, and you said that the middle one, the equanimity one, would be more
not equanimity. Let's not use equanimity. Well, I think that's okay, a bit confusing. Okay, so when you think that you are equal with the other person.
Okay, equal to. Now, I would say that has two natures. Nature, one would be a negative nature, which would be what you said. And the positive nature of that would be mutual, which is a mutual understanding that if they're on a mutual level with you, and you're on a mutual level with them, then it's a win-win situation. So it's instead of being competitive in a negative way, being unfriendly, because usually competition is unfriendly. Mutualism is friendly, and it's more positive.
That's good, isn't it? If you have that kind of view, that's good. That's what we want. Yeah, but what I'm saying is many times we have this kind of, you see, when we see an equal thing, then yeah, we want to compete, we want to beat the other person. But of course, as you say, if there is another aspect that, you know, we are equal, that's very good. That's what we want.
I want to bring up a life story. It's about your comment about the Dalai Lama, you know, what he said to speak up. I'm reading this book called Rising Out of Hatred. And it's the story how Great White Hope, there was this, you know, there's a movement, a racist white supremacy movement. And this one, this guy was Derek Black. His father was Don Black. He was the protege of David Duke, you know, Ku Klux Klan, all of that. This young man ended up as a student, and when it was found out who he really was, two things happened. First, he was totally ostracized. People hated him and so on and so forth. Didn't do anything. Then there were people who befriended him and didn't do anything. But they kept it up. But then there was also people who challenged him and showed him how he was wrong. And the combination of both seemed to have done it. And I just recently went on YouTube and saw the man himself talking about it in an interview. So it was very, very powerful because he had been raised, you know, in this seclusion of these ideas. Nobody has ever shown him that why it was wrong. So somebody debated him. So you have to do that as well, you know. But it wasn't out of hatred didn't do anything. It was out of, you know, this is why we're doing that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay, so let's go to the next one. Chölom kundu rangyu la tojin yomun kema ta tajin marun chebena zendab tongne tobar shows. This is the verse 3. In all my activities, may I probe my mind, and as soon as an affliction arises, since it endangers myself and others, may I confront it directly and avert it. So I remember giving this as an assignment to practice. Remember? We went through this. So now this is another kind of obstacles when we are practicing bodhicitta. So what happens? What to do? You know, we are all the time flooded by all these afflictions. So this is how do we address that? So in response to that, Lang Ritam by saying that, first of all, in all my activities, may I probe my mind all the time. Be mindful, always do this inspection. Watch your mind, whether there arises any afflictive emotions. Because it says that if it arises, we need to avert it directly or indirectly. Of course, here it says it's translated as directly, but in Tibetan, what sentab is more like a very forcefully. So may I confront it directly and avert it. So if we don't do that, you see that image there? That's what I'm trying to convey the message. So about this, the affliction. What does affliction do to us? So affliction in Tibetan is called nyumung. So the definition is dagyu marung acheba. That means the moment it arises in our mental state, in our mind, it kind of destroys our peace of mind. It brings some unease, anger, for instance. We are so happy, as suddenly if anger comes, it really destroys our peace of mind. Likewise, same with greed. Imagine for a while, if we are able to kind of, cut out all this greed, jealousy, anger, hatred, how wonderful that would be. Imagine for a while, especially greed. Why we are having all these problems, war in the world, the poverty in Africa, people dying from starvation, while others have billions. Their one meal costs like, I don't know, spending one night in those hotels, the bill comes to. And you, I think we have, there are like weddings. For 3 days wedding, it was like $1 million. Not just $1 million, many $1 million. I should get that number, Stania. So this is all because of greed. If we take that from our equation, if we take that out, world would be really, really nice. Everybody is willing to share. Everybody won't be, you know, all will be. At the moment, yeah, all those, corporates, is it? They're trying to make as much money as possible from people, as much profit as possible. That comes from greed. If we don't have this greed thing, it would be such a wonderful place to live in. Then imagine if you take out the rest of it, anger, jealousy, all that. And you can see the anger and jealousy is also actually, many of them are being triggered by this greed. So here it is saying that afflictions are always our real enemy. Even though we heartily realize that the worst enemy, our arch enemy, is residing peacefully within us. We have been harboring them all the time, you know. It's like our support. We need anger, and anger, suddenly anger arises. Oh, you should do that, you should bang, you know. You should punch that person, and we very obediently follow our afflictions. Yes.
Also, I think just to remember how mind and body coincide, you know, when we have these deep feelings and anger, it's affecting our health, it's affecting aspects of our health. But not
definitely.
Only that, if it's a confrontation with another person, we have to remember it's also affecting them. We're harming their body.
Yeah.
We're
yes.
Harming their health.
Yes, definitely. And
the other thing is, being under the force or power, and those two words are similar but they're different. The power is the empowerment of your positive actions, and the force is the ability to resist negativity. So under the force or under the power, depending on what angle you want to see it at, to avert it. But they're subtle. There's a subtle difference.
Okay, what was I going to say now? It's okay. I forgot what I was going to say. So you mentioned about anger. So the moment affliction arises, it kind of distorts our perception. The person, another person, let's say anger arises, we see the other person 100% black, 100% bad. But that cannot be true, because there are other people who sees that person 100% white and good. So all this, even attachment, we know that attachment kind of exaggerates the thing. Anger blinds us. So the moment these afflictions arises, there is no way. The current situation, current condition, it is all due to all these afflictions. How many times we have taken refuge? How many times we cycle in there? But because of this, our loyalty to afflictions, we keep cultivating, keep creating negative karma to come back and come back. But we don't realize that. We always, you know, if another person, I have a stanza from Shantideva to say that if the whole world, or whole sentient beings stand there as your enemy, that would be such a great power, such a force. But that cannot beat the destruction caused by our anger. It is like this picture here. Simje langbu yen dang ba narme ne ba chebadar a langje ma du nyo ba yi dina din din ne ba me. I have mentioned this before. The white elephant, the destruction the white elephant can cause will be enormous. In the picture, they are attacking, the elephant is attacking human beings. It can destroy the farmer's harvest. It can destroy, it can bring down houses. It can even kill, it can take a human being's life. But it cannot send you to lower realms. It cannot make you born as animals. It cannot make you born as hungry ghosts. But our afflictions, anger for instance, can make us fall down in the abyss, is it, of lower realms. And when we discussed before the anger, how it destroys the merits that we have cultivated for eons. Of course, it says that, you know, if you hold this hatred against a bodhisattva, then it's even worse. But we don't know, ordinary people, whether they are bodhisattvas or not. We don't have the clairvoyance. If we have the clairvoyance, of course, I say, oh, you are not bodhisattva, I can hold my grudge against you. But we don't know that. So there's a very risky business. So this is how we should try. In order for us to really practice this, we need to reflect, we need to contemplate on the damages or disadvantages of having afflict emotions. This we can bring in our own experience, life experience. Many times, the relationships, the friendship, all this are, you know, strained or destroyed because of all these afflictive emotions. You used to have a good friend, but no longer a friend. Why? Because in the moment of anger, you said something. No longer there. Or maybe this jealousy there, you don't want to be that with that person. So there are so many faults with afflictive emotions. So he was saying that in all our activities, whatever we do, always probe our mind, always watch what our mind is thinking, what our what we are saying, what we are thinking, what we are doing, especially probe our mind, our thoughts, whether any afflictions are arising or not. And if it is, if you realize that it is arising, then that very moment confront it and avert it. So if we are able to do that, then that kind of contributes towards cultivating this compassion attitude towards sentient beings. Otherwise, if we have these emotions, negative emotions, no way we will be able to cultivate compassion to all. No way we will be able to see all sentient beings unless we have to say that, except that person, I view you all. So that's not right. So here, Shantideva says, this enemy of mine, the afflictions, is long lived with neither beginning nor end. No other enemies can endure in this manner for so long. That's very true. In this very life, if you have enemy, it can become your friend. Maybe you will remain enemy for a few years or a few months. Or if it lasts forever, it will be like this lifetime. But whereas these afflictions, no matter where we are born, no matter which life we take in, wealthy, poor, whatever it is always there. If you relate to your enemies with friendship and gifts, these bring benefits and happiness. However, if you appease the afflictions, it brings ever more suffering and injury. It's so true. If you go and talk to your enemies nicely and, you know, apologize and give, reward him with gifts and all this thing, there is a chance that, you know, he turn or he become your friends. But this one, our real enemy, the afflictions, the more you treat that afflictions better or well, it creates more, it brings more injury. It brings more harm and damage. So for that reason, we need to probe our mind all the times and prevent all these afflictions from arising. Do we have time to go through this? Maybe we will discuss this in next class. But I want to do this. I couldn't print. I was going to print a copy for each so that we can recite this together at the end of the class. Since I couldn't, we can recite from the screen. Okay, Umzela, please.
With the wish to achieve the
highest aim, which surpasses even a wish-fulfilling gem, for the benefit of all sentient beings, may I hold them dearly at all times. Whenever I interact with others, may I view myself as the lowest among all, and from the very depth of my heart, hold others as superior. In all my activities, may I probe my mind, and as soon as an affliction arises, since it endangers myself and others, may I confront it directly and avert it. When I encounter beings of unpleasant character and those oppressed by intense negativity and suffering, as though finding a treasure of precious jewels, may I cherish them, for they are so rarely found. Others out of jealousy treat me wrongly with abuse and slander. May I take upon myself the defeat and offer to others the victory. Even if someone I have helped or in whom I have placed great hope gravely mistreats me in hurtful ways,
may I view him as my sublime teacher.
In brief, may I offer benefit and joy to all my mothers, both directly and indirectly, and may I quietly take upon myself all the hurts. May all of this remain unsullied by the
Buddha.
And by understanding all things as illusion-like, free of clinking, may I be released from bondage. That's the end.
We should say the concluding prayers, beginning with a short mandala offering on page 4, and then the concluding prayers on page 6.
Juje medo dama dra leje nyende kembande sanje jindo mede bwaye dogwe namda jina chobarajo rana mendala gana ya daya me Rinpoche maje paname ke gyuruche keba nyamba meba aya kone kondo pe warasho koze rabden jen namgara chile choju keba da lozan tembe chume sasum je chove muse tado ne gyuruche Rāve kurve shengamazu pendan dewa malu jungve ne Chere sewan tinze gyanzu yi shabe siti pato ten gyuru chi Jidara kemba da gundo sambo teyan dejin Deda kunji jesu talo uji gyawa deda tamje rabdu ngu Gyawa damje ji ngowa kala chodo ngabade Taye gyewe tsawan digun kyang sambo chuchi rabdo ngowa rae ji